From page 102, chapter From Mystery to Mystery, from the book UFOs: A Great New Dawn for Humanity, of Enrique Castillo Rincon. Some headlines added. First, hear again about the telepathic contacts prior to this physical contact, where the body/brain seemed to operate as an antenna for the receiving messages. Brain waves. Another interesting point was the way I tuned into the voices. If, after 10 or 15 minutes at a certain location, no reception was possible, then I moved my head to the right or the left, and good reception could be achieved. If I then moved slightly, it faded, forcing me to stay exactly at the right location and position. It was the same technique applicable to a transistor radio, when relocating or orienting the antenna to achieve good reception. A long while afterwards, and due to other experiences of the members of the group, I arrived at the following conclusion. The extraterrestrials were transmitting by means of sophisticated radio equipment, tuned to my brain waves. They could interfere with them and send messages. In January 1974, we were told about the Venusians' mission on Earth. They were aboard two scout ships in Colombian territory, exploring jungles and mountains. They had left their mothership somewhere near the South Pole. Life on Venus. On which level? The group of scientific explorers told us about the remarkable similarity between these areas of South America with their native planet. I could not understand how they could be Venusian, if scientific data from space probes, telescopes, etc., showed that there is no life on that planet. How could they tell us that they came from Venus? Was it a trick directed to some objective unknown to us? Were they watching our reactions to such statements? Anyhow, we accepted without protest such information. They never specified which were the similarities. Some of the crew members had already visited planet Earth before, but for some this was the first time. Possible upcoming war. At least what they calculated in 73. They seem to be investigating inaccessible locations. At present. Where the remnants, places would live after fleeing the cities during the nuclear war? In the remnants, according to what they said, there would be plenty of drinking water, timber, abundant vegetation, and fertile soil, in areas not subject to flooding. Good climate was a rule for these regions. Because of their geological makeup, they could lodge many people at the time of evacuation of the cities. They suggested, without saying it directly, that the future of the human race was at these areas. At the right moment, they would change to an ideal climate, which would last for thousands of years. One of the members of the group, Pedro Avila, asked about the exact location of these areas. We did not expect a specific answer, but were surprised to receive the exact coordinates, often remnants, out of the 12 planned by the extraterrestrials. We searched on a map, and all the locations matched old cities of the Inca Empire. According to them, the remnants will house people from all races and social levels. If by then people have not bridged the gaps between rich and poor, they would not be fit for acceptance in such places. The exact location of the remnants was pinpointed with great care by one of the scientists, by the name of Nomo. The Venusians continually gave moral teachings, which we confused with invitations to mysticism. That was one of our mistakes. Their words were sacred for all of us. Of course, the strength of their messages and the context under which they were received influenced us to interpret them spiritually. They always paid attention to our group, our actions, appreciations, and comments without using specific names. They referred to our collective daily behavior. Once, they criticized our vile expressions at the end of the meetings. Echoing our exact words, they repeated openly the inappropriate and double-meaning jokes we had used to lift the spirits at the end of the meetings. This truly offended them, and they were frank enough to tell us about it. The group misinterpreted the words of the extraterrestrials. Still, they encouraged us all the time with data and concrete testimonies about their presence. Great demonstration of weather dot control from the Eastern Time S. One of those encouragements was offered to the incredulous eyes of some of the members of the group at the end of December, 1973, as a sign of goodwill. Our greater brothers planned to remove the smog from the atmosphere of Bogota, which had been detected by them in great amounts. They planned to do it 8 days after the announcement was made, from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. They would surround the city with dark and low clouds, and an electric storm would take place, with rain and wind. The clouds would hide the ships. They advised us not to be afraid and to stay at home to watch the show. They said that we could make the announcement public if we wished to do so. I took the chance. This caused some fear on the part of some of the members of the group. I revealed the announcement to the same journalist who interviewed me on November 3rd. Alfonso Blanco and myself also visited the Weather Bureau in order to request that readings be taken before and after the cleaning operation. That was also to serve as proof of the existence and reliability of the group. As expected, no information was obtained, and we had no way to justify our request. Tension grew during the days prior to the demonstration. Some did not take the matter seriously, making it more difficult for us. Finally, the day arrived. With a certain disillusionment, we gazed out upon a most beautiful and clean sky, as befitted that time of the year. Nothing made us suspect a storm of any proportions whatsoever. The weather report announced no wind in a cloudless sky, with long dot-range visibility. At my office, I waited nervously, together with Alfonso, the unfoldment of the events. It was warm for Bogota. My associates and some employees glared at me with malicious eyes. To alleviate the tension, I walked quickly about, taking care of professional and office business, but I could not control my inner fears. I looked out the windows at every opportunity, hoping to detect some sign of the expected events. No, the morning looked splendid, good for outdoor activities. I feared ridicule when the time arrived, and nothing had happened. I would lose face in front of everyone. Picture not related to text directly by 10:30 in the morning. From the eastern side of the city, from over the mountains, a strong wind started to blow. Clouds at a noticeable clip invaded the sky, and what had been a sunny day, darkened ominously. Within 15 minutes, the sky became completely overcast, and powerful lightning bolts and thunder echoed over the city, unleashing one of the strongest tempests of the last months. Rain poured, flooding the streets and forcing people to look for shelter. Standing by the window, I missed no detail of this incredible event. My friends, baffled but still incredulous, acknowledged my prediction and congratulated me in a festive mood. We were all happy. Our office was on the 7th floor. The phone started to ring insistently. The first one to call was Chela, who was happily drenched because she stood in the rain at her home's patio in front of her sister. We laughed heartily, making remarks about the whole event. Marjorie was the second to call. She told me she could not fully understand what had happened that day. I went out to the street to watch the wet faces of the people. I wondered for myself what would happen if they knew the origin of that rain. Three ships had provoked that sort of chaos. They had come from a base somewhere on this planet. They had had to close the city in order to hide the ships, while they carried out the cleaning of the air by means of gigantic aspirators, shaped by artificial energy channels, which removed the smog and carried it away towards the South Pole. I went to visit the office of Gloria Ines Ortiz, a member of the group. Upon arriving at Tramitalco where she worked, I could see people desperately scooping water out from their homes, the result of one of the worst rainstorms lately. In her office, Gloria and I made remarks about the event. What would people think if they knew why it rained? This seemed rather funny. The rain stopped at 1 p.m. sharp, as announced a week before. The extraterrestrials had fulfilled their announcements with exactitude. I now better understood the purpose of the gigantic rear tubes on the mothership. Richard Deeb called me in the afternoon, very happy about the fulfillment of the prophecy, and told me that the masters had punished him with a tremendous drenching, since he had failed to take his umbrella, paying no attention to the announcements. A few days after the storm, Karen left Bogota for Mexico City, her hometown. So from page 122 from UFOs, a great new dawn for humanity and chapter The Truth Shall Always Be the Truth promised clear sight of one of their ships, where the group had been told telepathic to go a specific landmark along a road they knew at a certain time. All looked at the sky following the movements of the clouds with wind. The sky opened a little, allowing the moonlight to pass through, which shyly illuminated the landscape. It was 7 p.m., sharp. Then a radiance among the clouds over the lake moved in a swinging pattern, like a wave. I yelled and all marveled, cried and waved their arms. Marjorie, if I remember well, took off her scarf and saluted the ship, sending kissed with her left hand. The ship approached us in a slanting way, coming cut of the cloud where it was hidden, moving in straight line, and then inclining itself, allowing us to see its dome. Victor Rodriguez embraced me, and apologized for himself. I could not understand why, at first, but then he confessed to having requested that several of the members of the group .5, to be exact because not all accepted, think about oranges, bananas, tomatoes, etc., during the time of contact, in order to block it and check if the communication was real. They had been told to focus their thought on a certain thing prior to the contact. Some of the members of the initial group had separated by June of 1974, for different reasons. Alfonso Pancho Blanco had already left the group. According to him, he would dedicate himself to contact events in his own way, with spiritists, to accomplish healings. In this manner, our congenial friend became separated from the group, to follow his own contacts. Without anybody suspecting it, the ones who left, lost the opportunity to listen to the wonderful teachings that we were about to receive. It was as if the extraterrestrials were waiting for the final fusion of the remaining group, to initiate the most important information, both prophetic and humanistic. The former members were not to have the opportunity, to know the logic of logic, in its three sections, the nine times that will change the world, the message to the world, Plan A, and other teachings that we had the privilege to receive. Gradually, I began to better understand some of the information on various subjects that I had been given on board the Pleiadian ship the previous November 3 and 18. For example, one of my questions to Commander Cramier had to do with a factor or chemical agent in the blood which was capable of changing the personality and mien of an individual as a result of a transfusion. If the donor is stronger than the recipient, after a few months, certain violent traits could develop in the recipient, if the donor tends to be rather violent. Cramier was pointing out the risk involved in transfusions, because the blood carries a part of the soul energy as other sources tells. Another comment concerned tobacco. When he heard that I had not smoked, he mentioned that the harmful effects can reach third and fourth generations, hindering mental development, and in some cases promoting congenital deformations. He pointed out that tobacco could eventually be eradicated, but not before it caused millions of casualties. Birth control, he also told me, would get started in spite of religious beliefs and opposition, for two very powerful reasons. First, the effect of several wards would cause insecurity among young couples who would prefer not to have children. Second, international organizations would agree on plans for slowing down the population explosion, in order to improve the educational possibilities for the young, as well as their nutrition and employment. The same would happen in relation to poverty. Only through agreements between countries could famine, which still exists on several continents, be prevented or checked. You must learn many things before vanquishing all these problems, and only accumulated experience will teach you. In the universe, Cramier said, there is no such a thing as a final limit of learning. If this were the case, evolution would have reached a stagnation point in the most advanced civilizations, which is not the case. All civilizations dedicate a lot of time to the search for new paths conducive to a final level of enlightenment. You call it a search for truth, really, the name does not matter. But at this opportunity I want to confirm to you what we taught during the remotest times of humanity. The key that will open the door of knowledge is genetically engraved within yourself. It is necessary to eliminate the fear of that which is considered indecipherable. Similarly, discard the offer that which you were taught to consider untouchable. Obtain a balanced discernment about what you learn. Maintain a real control and discipline over that which hurts your health or affects your senses. Intelligence should be used as such. With intelligence, do not waste this gift in all its magnificence. During one of the discussions on November 18th, I remember that I stopped to scrutinize, on the wall of the ship, a very unique winged serpent. The commander approached me as he noticed my interest in the symbol. An interesting conversation got started, which I would like to have recorded, about illnesses, and the possibility of eradicating them within a short period of time. He asked me to explain again my concerns, but then Krishnamurti stepped in, they talked, and then I stated my question carefully. I must say that, if at the time of the contacts I had been better disciplined, my questions would have been quite superior. He looked straight into my eyes, when I asked, and then answered, a dark gene carried by terrestrials will be detected soon to be isolated, and as a result, the duration of life will be increased substantially. No, Enrique, it does not represent a utopia. Many will think this is impossible, but we assure you that in a few years this discovery will be a reality, and also a serious problem for science. Ethics and values are required to handle this new situation. This dark agent is responsible for cellular aging, which carries with it premature death. When this achievement is at hand, human life duration will be a matter of worldwide scientific agreement. The minimum standard life expectancy could be set at 300 years, without any aging at all, with an apparent age of about 33 years. I was left utterly breathless. I was listening to what seemed to me to be the most transcendental piece of information of all time. What has been called eternal youth. Now somebody was telling me that it is possible. Cramer continued, when this gene becomes known to science and isolated, then humankind shall enter a marvelous era of achievements and longer life. It will occur at a bad moment when man shall also gain control over technological and scientific know.how that he will not be able to handle, because he lacks real spiritual values. Do not forget this, Enrique. At the end of this short but eloquent speech, Cramer and Krishnamurti scrutinized me in considerable detail. We continued walking inside the ship, but my heart and the dark gene struggled to emerge from myself. What I had just heard, the categorical statements from the Pleiadian mission chief, were just too much. They noticed my change of disposition, the shock produced by their statements. Now I thought, with what arguments was I going to explain this, and at what opportunity? Who would listen to me? How could people believe me without proofs? This is one of the reasons that I kept the information to myself for so long. I was already being called insane. How could I defend such additional incredible data? I learned to handle information cautiously because the Pleiadians, delivering the final stroke, told me the following. There are three genetic codes interacting for creating life in the universe. You already have the first one, and the second will be discovered shortly, before the turn of the century. You must handle this with utmost wisdom and moderation, because when the third is discovered during the next century, approximately in the year 2025, man will know how life started on Earth and will be in a position to learn how the universe began. Next part. Part on Untactive Anusions. Must have been on their lowered vibration state, adapted to Earth's vibratory level.